consideration for hosting this really important community event. Before we hear from the six work groups that John and Lynette have referred to, it's worth setting the stage for those reports by articulating a set of core values and assumptions that have been agreed to by the Great Schools for All partners and that really have essentially framed and shaped the work done to date by each of these six work groups. I was asked to summarize the core values and assumptions, and I feel like a little bit of being sort of an unnecessary add-on at this point because John and Lynette have done such a good job of providing the context, the thorough context for where we are today, and it really said a lot of what I had planned to say, but what I'll try to do is just kind of briefly summarize a few of the highlights related to the values and assumptions. Okay, just want to make sure where we are here. I should first say, before saying anything else, that each of you has packets in your lab at this point. Those packets contain a lot of more detailed information than what you'll hear this morning. You'll hear kind of some summaries, but there's more detail in the packets and also on the GS4A website. So I would encourage you to explore those materials for more details. As you see here in the first slide, the first assumption, and you heard this referenced earlier by Lynette and John, the core belief that all children, regardless of their background, can learn. It's a core belief in the potential of every child in this community to learn. But we also know that the odds of learning and the odds of academic achievement and success are significantly better in some settings than in others. And if a kid grows up in a concentrated, high poverty area, the odds of success are much lower. And we're talking about improving the odds of success for all kids, regardless of their zip code. All kids deserve a learning environment which heightens the probability of success. It's important to acknowledge, and I think we're all aware of this, that there are many kids in the city school district who have risen above their poverty backgrounds and who have gone on to be great successes. We all know of such people, many of them we may know personally. And those are really important to celebrate, as was said earlier. We also know that there are a number of really strong schools in the city school district, and we need to celebrate those. But the reality is that given the high concentrations of poverty in every school in the city, the odds, frankly, are stacked against city students. And the city school district cannot overcome the effects of concentrated poverty by itself. So another of our assumptions, and you heard it referenced earlier, is that solutions must involve the entire community, including inter school district and cross school district initiatives of various types, in order to help ensure a strong, well-educated core of students, both city and suburbs, and a vibrant regional economy going forward. Next slide. As you've heard, there's a significant body of national research that documents that any proposed school reconfiguration should have a broad socioeconomic mix of students with a target goal of no more than 40% low-income students per school to assure the best outcomes for the greatest number of students, reducing the achievement disparity gap between low-income and more affluent students, raising performance levels significantly for low-income students, while maintaining high performance levels for more affluent students. For example, we learned as we looked more closely at the Raleigh experience, where the 40% goal is very much in place and has been a policy shaping programs in that community for years, we learned that the graduation rates for low-income and minority students are more than 30 percentage points higher than comparable students in the Rochester City School District. Think about that, 30 percentage points higher. That equates to upwards of 70% graduation rate in Raleigh schools among low-income and minority students compared to the low 40s here in Rochester. And at the same time, if you isolate just the more affluent suburban students in the Raleigh area, those graduation rates are at about the same level as our most affluent and best suburban school districts. So think about what that means. Clearly, in the Raleigh area, they're not satisfied. They know that the gaps between affluent and less affluent has not been closed, but it has been significantly reduced. And that kind of reduction in the disparity of outcomes, we would love to see happen if we could even get close to that here in Rochester. So I think that's one of our goals. And not to say that Raleigh has all the answers, but when you look at that difference in graduation rates, it sure gets your attention, got the Great Schools for All group's attention, and I think shapes some of what we hope we will be able to move toward in this community in the discussions we'll have this morning. The added student diversity in places throughout the country also increases cross-cultural understanding across all groups and better prepares all students for the more demographically diverse workforce that they are all going to be facing in the future. No single silver bullet solution will be sufficient. A variety of approaches will be needed to solve our current urban education problems, and you'll hear some suggestions along those lines in the next few minutes. The last slide, please. Throwing more money at the problem will not be sufficient by itself to overcome the effects of concentrations of poverty in our city schools. And we simply can't reach the 40% target goal within the city alone, since every school already far exceeds that low income level. So the assumption is that to have any hope of achieving the diversity goal, and in so doing to improve our educational outcomes community-wide, we must develop voluntary inter-district solutions to reach as many students as possible. At this point, we are not advocating mandatory solutions, but rather attempting to create and build on a variety of voluntary, collaborative partnership approaches, about which you'll hear more from the work groups. So given these core values and assumptions, it's time to hear from the work groups who have attempted to address various issues with those values in mind. As you've heard, these groups were formed in response to issues raised last November. Each has worked diligently and intensely over the past 60 days to develop preliminary action plans in the following core areas. And you've heard these, but I'll state them in the order in which you'll hear about them this morning. We'll start off with a discussion of summer learning, then move to the urban-suburban program, inter-district magnet schools, regional planning, legislative solutions, and outreach and diversity. Each group will report on work in progress. And I emphasize that, work in progress. There are no final solutions being discussed here this morning, but on the other hand, some very promising ideas and specific approaches that are offered for your consideration, for the community's consideration, and hopefully action coming out of this event today. We want your reactions, and you'll hear more about how those will be shaped a little bit later this morning. But each group in the meantime will provide an approximately 10-minute summary of their findings and preliminary recommendations, which are also fleshed out in more detail in your packets. Following the presentation, you'll hear more from Jeff Lynn about how the follow-up breakout sessions will operate, at which time you'll have the opportunity to raise questions about what you hear this morning and also express your views regarding what you're about to hear. To save time, I'm not going to introduce each group individually, as the order of the presentation and the names of the presenters are listed in your packet. So without any further ado, Lois Geis will kick off the discussion of the summer learning work group. Lois and her team.